This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, there's a lot to be done. First of all, you salute the commander-in-chief who got those 76 million votes and is going to chart the way. And I'll give him advice and counsel along the way. I'll just say what he told me. Return the Pentagon to the warfighters, Pete. Get in there and clean out all the social justice, politically correct garbage on top and get back to lethality, warfighting, accountability, meritocracy, and readiness. And guess what? 95% of the people in that building in the Pentagon and that wear the uniform, that's all they want to do anyway.
Pete Hegseth talking about his nomination as defense secretary from Donald Trump to participate in the cabinet in that capacity. And of course, everybody's big question is, how will this Republican majority of senators react to Donald Trump's appointments? And we're excited to talk to your senator and my adopted senator, Eric Schmidt, on the Annie Fry Show. Welcome back, Senator. Thank you for your time today. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back with you.
So when you hear Pete Hegseth there's a whole bunch of people that are, people are really wondering, are the Republicans in the Senate going to come together and confirm these nominations? What's been your experience among your colleagues and the excitement behind or worry about confirming some of these nominations?
I'm generally really positive about it. I think Trump has put together a slate of nominees for these important positions that share his vision. He ran on the idea of disrupting permanent Washington and sort of the status quo. He wants people who are going to go in there and be reformers. A lot of things we can do in Congress, but there are a lot of things that are just cultural shifts that need to happen within the agencies, reforms that need to happen from leadership. And so you got to have people who buy in. And Pete Hegseth is one of those guys. I met with Pam Bondi, who was in my office today. I'm meeting with Sean Duffy later today. Pete was in my office last week. I'm actually on the Armed Services Committee, so that confirmation will run through the Armed Services Committee when we get back in January. I think he's in pretty good shape. I think they're all in pretty good shape, and they should be. There are very few examples, very, very few examples of senators from the same party of a president that just got elected rejecting cabinet officials. So I know that the liberal media wants everyone to believe that it's somehow a Republican Senate's job to dunk on President Trump. It's not. It's actually not. We have a role in the Constitution. It's advice and consent. But the president should have wide deference here on who he gets to pick for his team, his leadership team, right? He ran. He won the popular vote. He swept all the battleground states. And so I think all these nominees are in really good shape, and they should be.
You know, you mentioned about, you know, what the media, the left-leaning media, the Democrat punditry out there is trying to press upon the Republicans in the Senate to remind them of what their duty is here. And I think that that is one of the biggest complaints that Republicans within the party have had about the Republican Party for so long, which is you get handed the power to make the changes that you campaign on, and then you get it, and then you start doing things that the Democrats would never dream of doing. But especially in the Senate, it looks like the Republican Party, the representation for the Republican Party in the Senate is going to look a little bit different. The leadership certainly is. What do you think of comparing your time in the Senate prior to and coming up now as that leadership change has taken place?
Yeah, I think you just look at the last 6 or 8 years since really President Trump became the leader of the Republican Party. The composition of the Senate is changing, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's becoming a party. I mean, look, what I tell people, whether it was, you know, the leader race or any of this stuff, it's time for the Republican Party to reflect the values of our voters. And I think that the exclamation point that President Trump gave with this election, by winning a mandate to deliver, he has a lot more allies now, I think, in the Senate and the House than he did the first time around. He's also, I think, picking a cabinet that there's not a lot of daylight between where he's at and where they're going to be on important issues. And I think that's good. Like, that's why you run. That's why when you win, you can execute a vision. And like I said, you know, whether it's Pam Bondi or Pete Hegseth or Sean Duffy or Tulsi Gabbard or Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the president deserves the ability to move forward on the agenda he ran on and have people he trusts around him. And so I do think that that's where Senate Republicans are at right now. I expect that all these nominees will pass.
Senator Schmidt, when I have gone back, you know, anybody who, it's usually just the left-leaning media, they're freaking out about somebody or something, which usually means we're right, hovering right over the target, or at least the president is on his nominations, because they freak people out in all the right ways. It really seems to me like some of these nominees should have overarching bipartisan support. Then I go back and look at the votes that were taken over Joe Biden's nominations. There's a lot of Republican support in past votes for some of these people, like Merrick Garland. I think two people voted against Merrick Garland. I just don't understand even how it would be complicated to see these people be able to go through. And I'm wondering if you think there will be bipartisan support for many of Donald Trump's nominations.
I hope so. I think some people have even signaled that, some Democrats, and I hope that they hear these nominees out. Again, Donald Trump won. We have, 53 votes in the United States Senate. Like, we should be able to. We don't need any Democrats' votes to do this. Sometimes you do. We don't for this. But having said that, I do think that they're, I hope the Democrats take the time to meet with these nominees, ask the questions. I think there will be some votes. I think, Marco Rubio comes to mind. I hope Pam Bondi, hopefully there are many, many others, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is some Democrat support. I think it'd be a good thing. But we shouldn't rely on that.
Right.
That's why, Republicans, we shouldn't rely on that. And you're right. What you're touching on, Annie, is exactly right, which sometimes gets lost in this town, which is why I'm home. I fly back and forth every week and stay very connected to Missouri, because when you talk to people, they articulate the same things that you're talking to. How come how come when the Democrats win, they do big things and they all stick together? And we need to have that kind of mentality. We have a very unique opportunity for at least 2 years, hopefully 4 years. We've got the Senate, the House, and the White House to move forward on an agenda. And Trump was very clear about what this was. I spent a lot of time on the campaign trail, including the last weekend of the campaign. He never wavered from this. We're going to secure our border. There are going to be deportations. Like, he's going to do all the things he said he was going to do. We're going to be energy dominant. We're going to be respected around the world. And you're already seeing some of these things happen. I mean, he was in Paris this past weekend. You're already seeing leaders come down to Mar-a-Lago and address the concerns. And so I think we're already kind of down that road. And we have a responsibility, I think, to the country to get this country in a much better place than it's been the last 4 years.
Oh, speaking with Senator Eric Schmidt, and that's kind of what I had written down as my next question. In my lifetime, I'm 40 years old. I don't think I've ever been in a position to witness the transformative opportunity that is in front of Republicans in the next 2 to 4 years, not just to put everything back the way Republicans had it, when Donald Trump was president the first time, but when you look at what Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy are doing with Doge, the actual concept of cutting government spending is kind of mind-blowing for a millennial like myself, because we haven't seen that. It's only ever gotten bigger. How transformative and how forward-thinking do you think the Republicans can handle this next 2 years?
I totally agree with you. So I'm 49. I've got you in the last few years. But I remember, when I was a freshman in college, was a sophomore technically, in 94, which was the Republican Revolution, right? It's the first time Republicans took back Congress in like 50 years or maybe longer than that. But Bill Clinton was in the White House, right? So like you didn't have the same opportunities. You really have to go back to Reagan and some of the big, bold stuff that he did. But I think this is different. I actually believe we have a much clearer view now of the things that we can address. I'm on that Doge caucus. I think it's exciting. There's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars exposed as wasteful. People are going to, scratch their heads and say, how in the world is this possible? And it's our job to go fix it. I think we have a chance. And I feel so fortunate at my age to be in the United States Senate to be able to help with this, to kind of reset the dynamics. What we saw now, the Republican electorate, the base is broader. It's bigger. That's a good thing. It's working class folks. It's multi-ethnic. You have, you just look at any demographic, Asian Americans, Hispanics. Trump did incredibly well with all of those groups. because they're hungry for somebody who speaks to their issues. The Democrats have been captured by this woke ideology. They're totally, you know, it's a party of, by, and for the elites. And so we have a real chance. And if we do it right, it can be, sort of a majority party, and not just for bragging rights, but like to actually do some important things. Like, there's no reason in the world, Annie, we shouldn't be the most energy dominant country in the history of the world. And that means national security. It means economic security. It means jobs. There's no reason why we can't have a secure border. We absolutely can do that. There's no reason why 15 million people came here legally, other than the Democrats wanted it that way. We can shut that out, too. So I just think we're on the cusp of a new era of prosperity in this country where we're secure. People feel good about being Americans again. They don't feel like, and the Democrats have got to figure this out. I think their self-reflection is, the dose of self-reflection is being poisoned by sort of their disdain in many ways for so-called flyover country. They can't bring themselves to admit that they just talked over and talked down to so many people over the last 4 years. And people said, you know what? That's not the kind of America we want to live in. We love this country. We don't think that our kids should be raised to hate this country. And they spoke up loud and clear on November 5th. And now the task at hand is to get a cabinet in place and pass an agenda that, again, is reflective of where the American people are at.
Yes, get right down to the art of the business of what's going to take place. We're speaking with Senator Eric Schmidt. There's one other topic I wanted to address with you since I had the opportunity to have you on here. Of course, you served as a statewide official in Missouri as the attorney general here. You're a law and order guy. And I'm watching, the Daniel Penny trial, the verdict that came through there, but also the murder of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, and just very strange some of the reaction and the justification in conversation throughout the media that's taking place. Like, a man lost his life, and if it's for a cause, there are some people who are kind of explaining it away. We've seen in New York City, in the wake of the Daniel Penny verdict, people really pushing back on that BLM kind of mentality that really got its legs here in St. Louis and Ferguson 10 years ago. And it just feels like what you were just discussing there, that we are on the precipice of an entire reset. Making America great again is a great way to talk about it, but a reset in our expectations from each other, societally, culturally, and law and order, and the appreciation of those who keep law and keep order is at the top of the list of how to restore that society. I'm wondering, in the wake of the Daniel Penny verdict and what's going on in New York City, what thoughts you might have on that?
Yeah, I mean, thank God for the way that played out. I mean, this was a guy that was trying to protect other passengers who were, at risk. And the idea that those charges were even brought is embarrassing, and it, could be described as much worse than that. But Alvin Bragg is just destroying people's faith in the justice system. But I do think when you have a verdict like that, I should say that he was not going to go to jail for that, it is a bit affirming. I think, though, what you're talking about, and I've started to, I think it takes a little time to put all these pieces together, but I sort of view the last 10 years, take 2014 and that, was sort of a, we're going to look back, I think, in historians, if it's not AI generated by libs who's control the algorithm, you're going to look back as a really strange time in American history. You've got this sort of Black Lives Matter movement that is nothing more than cultural Marxism by another name. You had COVID and all the examples of government excess. And the Democrats felt so emboldened. It could only work, Annie. It could only work if they silenced the silent majority of Americans into believing that they couldn't speak up.
Yes.
Right? That they couldn't say things like, yeah, I know what a man is, and I know what a woman is, or that's wrong, or absolutely people should be punished for this. They tried to intimidate people, and they had this vast censorship enterprise as an enforcement mechanism. And one of the things I'm most proud of is that Missouri versus Biden case. It sort of lifted the veil. Musk buys X, or Twitter, now X. And people are no longer afraid, I think, in many ways, to speak the truth. I saw more yard signs. I saw more MAGA flags and yard signs, even in places in St. Louis County where I live. I think people are unafraid now, whereas before, the left was obsessed with controlling what you could say and what you could say, and hear and see. And think of COVID. You couldn't go outside unless you were going to a Black Lives Matter protest, right? Like, somehow COVID didn't exist if it was the cause that you believed in. I think we're going to look back on that, and people are going to be like, what in the hell was going on? But I think we broke the fever. And President Trump led that charge, and I think it's all the more reason why we need to deliver on an agenda that works for, you know, more Americans.
Amen to that. Enough of the absurdity. It's time to speak out, and you can speak out with rational common sense. And there's every time someone's willing to do that, there's so many people around going, yeah, what they said. And I think we're back. And you're a huge part of that in the United States Senate. We're grateful for your time here on the Annie Frye Show. Keep doing what you're doing. We look forward to contacting you again soon.
We're so back, Annie. Let's go.
We're so back. That is exactly right. Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas. See ya.
I love talking to Eric Schmidt about common sense, because when you can articulate things in the way he does, which is speaking directly to the point, you know, talking about our AI lib overlords trying to rewrite history. When you think back about the last 10 years, it really has been, I don't know what 2014 was, but I guess it was when the Barack Obama stranglehold on the administration, you get 2 years out from the next election, everybody starts asking questions again, and the freak out that the left had, and really the tentacles of power that they were able to invoke in order to keep us from speaking our minds, from challenging thoughts based on our own perspectives. They had such great power, and we collectively need to be in a all hands in the middle, never again situation. We should be able to disagree. We should be able to challenge. We should be able to represent our own thoughts with our own mind. And we set that aside for quite some time out of fear. Never again. Not in my lifetime. Let's take a quick break. We'll get Ryan Wiggins back in the studio. The YouTube live chat poll, I haven't really mentioned this much today, if at all. But here's the question for you. And this is kind of broad, but I want to know, do you care if your favorite entertainers are good people? Yes or no? Now, entertainers, you're entertained by movies, by music, by sports, by art. I don't know. Whatever it is to you. Like, you know how they say never meet your heroes? Your entertainer of choice, that actor in the movie that you really like, you find out that they're a bad person. Is that a problem for you? We'd love to know what you think about this on the Annie Frye YouTube live chat. Do you care if your favorite entertainers are good people? Yes or no? We'll be right back.